This is episode number 9 with Nicole Rocklin. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Welcome back to the Rise Higher podcast. How's your day going today? I hope you've been feeling empowered. And if you need it, I know my very special guest and inspiring friend, Nicole Rocklin, will hook you up in this episode. Now, Nicole is an Oscar-winning producer. She won the Oscar for Best Picture last year for her movie Spotlight. And she's also been named as one of Variety's top 10 producers to watch. She's also produced the movies The Perfect Guy, directed by Dave Rosenthal, and Middle of Nowhere, directed by John Stockwell, starring Anton Yelchin and Susan Sarandon. And before Nicole formed her current production company, Rocklin Fost, she had an overall deal at Alcon Entertainment with her company, Rocklin Entertainment. Nicole and her producing partner, Bly, have built their production company focused on telling transformative, entertaining, true stories that engender collective social dialogue that inspire change and celebrate innovation. I'm all about that, and clearly their work resonates as they were recognized for their hard work and incredible taste in telling stories by winning an Oscar. Now, in this episode, we talk about Nicole's journey that got her to where she is now, being an incredible mom and a revered movie producer. During the time that Nicole was making Spotlight become a reality on the screen, she had a lot of challenging life circumstances thrown her way. She unexpectedly had a child, became a single mom, she bought a house, her father passed away, she had 2 movies in production at the same time, and a year later she went through award season. Those circumstances showed her, as a woman balancing her career, family, a child, life circumstances, what you're capable of and able to accomplish when you have amazing people around you. So some of the things that we chat about today are the importance of cultivating trusting relationships and creating a support system. How having a clear vision allows you to focus and to keep moving forward no matter what challenges are happening in your life. The power of asking for help. The importance of hitting the reset button by practicing self-care. Nicole shares how she built incredible relationships that have supported her to her success. She busts the misconception that when you win awards or achieve success, that it gets easier. And we talk about the key quality you must develop to keep you going in the moments when you want to quit. And Nicole shares some questions to ask yourself that help you determine if you should keep moving forward with what you're doing, and so much more. Now, for everything that we mentioned in today's episode and for links to connect with Nicole, you can check it out in the show notes, and that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP9. Now, without further ado, let's bring on Nicole. Nicole.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for being on the Rise Higher podcast. As you know, I've been chasing you down to get you on here, sending all these messages. I know you're so busy. So I'm so deeply grateful that you're able to carve out some time in your busy schedule to be with me today.
I'm so excited to be with you, and I'm so sorry. I wish my life was as organized as my business, but it's not. So I apologize.
That's what happens when you're a boss. A boss mom and a boss in your career. So I get it.
It's a hard balance. It's a really, really hard balance. But someone has to do it, right? So it's exciting. I'm so glad to talk to you. Obviously, you know how much respect I have for you and love I have for you. And I'm excited to be here with you.
You know, I love feeling as if I'm a part of your life, even through social media. if we're not connecting, I know that I can count on finding out what's happening with you and what you stand for and with Braxton. And so thank you, Mark Zuckerberg. So I know through a conversation that we had before I was going to get you on the show, we started, you know, I got to catch up with you. I hadn't spoken with you since you won your Oscar. Congratulations again for Spotlight last year, 2016. The movie was phenomenal. I watched it. I'll probably watch it again. And you did such a spectacular job with it. And I know being in the entertainment industry is not easy.
Not at all.
First of all, what had you get into doing what you're doing right now as a producer?
You know, I think I was always inspired by movies. I wasn't a kid walking around at 5 or 6 with a video camera. I never sort of envisioned that I would be in this sort of place that I am now, which is exciting. You know, I always loved film. I always loved television, but I'm not, you know, I'm not the child that has always, you know, dreamt about being in the business. You know, I think I really wanted to work in the music business, and I had, you know, a couple very close allies and a very, you know, close relationships that sort of guided me and helped me. And when I got out of college, I wanted to go to law school and to focus on music. And I worked for a couple lawyers to make sure it's what I wanted to do. And I realized quickly it really wasn't. So I left and I went to Bruckheimer. When I was at Bruckheimer, I realized through a mentor of mine that I really was sort of better suited to just figure it out on my own. Mm. I really didn't have the skill set that most people have as producers, and I just sort of learned by doing. And I left and you know, really just sort of figured it out on my own. But I wasn't somebody that, you know, was uber connected, and I didn't have 1,000 relationships, and I really just sort of dug in and figured out, you know, how I wanted to sort of pursue this business.
Yeah. So when you said you figured out how you wanted to pursue it, what was your perspective? What was the framework that you were going to pursue this with?
You know, I was young. I could live at home. I didn't have a lot of bills. I didn't have a child. So I think for me, it was just really like the fall, if I failed at that point, would have been, you know, much smaller than if I failed, you know, having a mortgage and a child and a family and all of those things. And I think the way I really looked at it was I wanted to build my own company. And, you know, it takes, producers are the last people to get paid, and it takes a long time to get movies made. And I think a lot of people have a false perspective that producers make a lot of money, which is not always the case. And, you know, I think I built my own business, and I ended up getting an overall deal at Alcom, which is one of the big financiers at Warner Brothers. So I was based at their company, but for me, it was just building my own company, and I built it for several years. And then I realized that I met somebody who ended up, you know, now becoming my partner, which I feel so lucky for, but it was really building it from the production side and really developing material and having a good eye for material and really trying to like learn the business and figure out how to put projects together. So that really was sort of my angle in. I didn't work as a development executive. I never worked at a studio. I didn't work my way up that way. I just worked, you know, relationships and controlling underlying material.
Yeah. That's so interesting that you say that producers are the last ones to get paid, when I feel like they're the ones that have the most control over the project.
You have very little control. You know, unless you have your own financing, you have very, very little control. I mean, yes, you put your projects together the way you want to. And yes, you have a vision for what you want and you're willing to do them or not. But you're at someone else's whim when someone else is financing the project. So you don't make the decisions of when the movies go. You don't make decisions of, you know, if you're going to be able to get an actor or not. You know, you're not, you don't make the decision whether a director is going to sign on or not. You can present the best possible package to somebody and the best possible material to someone, but there's, you're not necessarily going to control whether you get the elements that you want and the financing that you want. Things happen when they're supposed to happen. And, you know, Spotlight took 8 years from the point that we got the rights to, you know, post award season. And it was a long, you know, a long sort of road. Things are not easy and they're never easy. So I think, I mean, maybe luck comes into it, but things, and I think when they do happen, they happen the way they're supposed to, but it takes time to get to that point.
Just of what I know of the business and trying to put things together, it does take a long time, and it takes a deep level of resilience, determination, commitment. Do you see those as things that you had to rely on, and were there other qualities that you had to tap into really get this movie made? Because 8 years to put a project together is a good amount of time. What was it that you had to reach in within yourself to make sure that this got completed?
If you even step back a step further, I think for us, I think Bly, my partner, and I, you know, we found the story, we got the rights, it took a long time. And I think the thing that I think you have to look at before you even look at the specific project is you have to build a reputation, you have to build relationships, you have to build the access to be able to put this in front of the right people that you want. You know, if you randomly call somebody and say, hey, I'd like to give this to your client, you know, you're putting that person in a very tricky position. If they don't have a good relationship with you, they don't know if you're going to be good to work with. They don't know if you're going to be a good, you know, sort of ally. So it takes a long time to build yourself up to a place within the business where people respect you, that they're willing to help put things together with you, and they're willing to show great material, whether it's great or not. But as long as you have that sort of great relationship with people, they're willing to put it in front of their clients. So I think that's first. But secondly, I think to answer your question, I know that didn't answer your question, but to answer your question, I think it takes a lot of resilience. A lot of people say no. I think, you know, if you really believe in something, and I think Bly and I really believed in this, and we said to ourselves really early on that, you know, if we ever got only one movie made and we got this one made, we'd feel pretty good about it, because it was that special to us. Wow. And it wasn't a piece of business. It, you know, this is, you know, the movies we make are people's lives, and they're people's stories, and they're people's careers, and there's people's legacies. And I think for us, it's much more than just a piece of material or a piece of business. You know, we put so much heart and soul into that movie, and we knew and we stood behind what we saw in it. And I think we probably had 70 people or 60 people or whatever it is pass on the project. Wow. We knew what we had was special, and we were willing to sort of go to the mat with it. And we knew that, you know, the right people would come together, and we knew who we wanted. And, you know, some of those people passed, but we went, you know, came back to us at the right moments when they couldn't get it out of their head. So I think a lot of this just is a lot of determination. But I think, you know, the will and determination comes after you're able to identify, you know, something that's special, you know, and there's a lot of things out there. So I think you sort of have to get through the clutter. And when you find something that's sort of life-changing, and which I think this was life-changing for a lot of people, you fight really hard for it. I mean, it's the only thing that I know how to do.
Wow. What would you say were maybe your greatest lessons from producing Spotlight?
I think you have to understand sort of the circumstances of it, at least the last two, or I'd say 2.5 years of that movie. I think we were in prep on that movie, and I had a child, and I'm a single mom, and I didn't plan on having a child. I bought a house, which I wasn't planning on buying, but it was move or buy. So I bought a house. My father passed away, and I had two movies in production at the same time. So I think, and then a year later, obviously went through crazy award season and won an Oscar and all of those things. But I think for me, those circumstances just show me as a woman who's trying to balance, you know, a career, a family, a child, life circumstances with losing my dad. I think it shows what you're able to accomplish when you have amazing people around you, because you can't do it yourself. There's no way you can do anything yourself, not in those kinds of circumstances. But if you have, you rely on amazing, you know, people, and know who those people are that you, you know, deeply trust, I think you realize what you're actually capable of. And I think, what else did I learn? I learned, you know, how committed myself and Bly, my partner, were to, you know, making this movie and taking it through award season was not about us, and it wasn't about winning awards, and it wasn't about any of those things. I think we realized at one point that the platform to stand on that stage and give, you know, victims' families or the survivors a voice and a platform, because their voice was, you know, pushed down and concealed and, you know, dismissed for so long,
yeah,
was the ultimate reward, I think. So for us, it was really about, you know, having the spotlight effect, which ended up, you know, opening doors and bringing conversation, all these things. So for us, I know that's sort of a long-winded answer and I didn't totally answer your question, I think, but the level of commitment and the level of endurance and the level of focus, no matter what sort of the clutter is going on in your life, you know, if you have like clear vision on what you're trying to accomplish, I think it's, you're able to accomplish it under, you know, extreme circumstances.
Yeah. I think what you said is so key, is having a clear vision to be able to move you forward in life. So many times when I talk to people and I ask them, what do you want? The answer is, I don't know. And then they are usually complaining and upset that they don't have what they want. But then again, when you ask them, there's no clarity there. And so that makes life, or even just feeling like you're moving forward in some way, so much harder. So I love what you said, is vision is so key. And well, I didn't even realize you went through all of that during the time.
It was crazy. It was really crazy. I can tell you this.
Wow.
It was crazy. But by the way, like, I would not have been able, I had four amazing partners. I have my own partner, my own company, Bly, but Michael Sugar and Steve Golan, who we produced Spotlight with, are the most amazing partners. And we all relied on each other. You know, there were moments when all of us had things going on. Bly, my partner, was pregnant while we were in production. And, you know, we run our own company and we have, you know, two people that work with us at our companies. We have a company to run. So I think what you realize is what you're able to accomplish with, you know, that clear vision and what you're able to do, but it's never easy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, it's never easy. And even in that, you know, in the circumstances we had with this project, I mean, we were trying to go into production a year earlier than we did. You know, we had different actors, you know, some different interests from different actors at one point, and certain interests didn't work out. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, what you realize is, you know, there's a Hebrew word called besher, which means meant to be. And I think things happen when they're supposed to happen, with who they're supposed to happen with. And new people obviously come into our lives at different moments. But, you know, I think besides becoming a mother, I think it's the most special, you know, making this movie was the most special experience of my life, because I think there's a deep love that everybody from, you know, Tom McCarthy, to, who directed it and co-wrote it, and Josh Singer, who wrote it with Tom, and Mark Ruffalo. I mean, we all love each other. And there's like a deep love for everybody involved in the project. So forget the awards. It was just an absolutely rewarding experience.
That's so beautiful. And it sounds like, again, knowing you, you are so committed to helping people have a voice who don't, and that was your truest commitment, not about, oh, I want to win the Oscar, or, oh, I want to get, you know, nominated for a BAFTA or anything else. It was just you wanting to stand for something. And that is so beautiful and so powerful.
I think it's what Bly and I have really built our company on. You know, I think that the company that we built really, you know, is focused on telling transformative, entertaining, true stories that engender a collective social dialogue and inspire change and celebrate innovation. That's really what we want to do. And those are the types of projects, we have a number of them that we're working on, and they're not easy. I mean, movies and television, you know, that give the voiceless a voice, are not the easiest to get made. But I think that people want, you know, they want good content. You know, I think people are sick of the next superhero movie. I love superhero movies. Wonder Woman was amazing.
I know, I loved it. But there was a really powerful message in there, though, too.
1,000%. So it's, you know, it's exciting. And I think for us, too, it's also about supporting women and working with women and putting movies together with women and aligning ourselves with women. Not that we're, you know, not that we're not working with amazing men, but there's so many great stories about women that, and we want to see more women behind the camera, more women producing. I think Bly and I were the first producing team to win the Best Picture Oscar. And I don't know, there's not that many, there's a few, but there's not that many female producing teams that are out there. And, you know, there's a couple that we're friends with and we love them, but there's not many.
Trailblazing.
Trying.
That's what you attempting. Do. You're Sherry, doing it.
Sherry Lansing's about 10 miles in front of us, always just trying to live in her shoes. So, yeah.
I know there are so many women out there, also a lot of single moms. My mom was a single mom, and I watched how she managed working, raising two kids, and just trying to make ends meet. And for you, what advice based off of what you went through and knowing what you had to lean into to keep moving forward through all the life circumstances you had, what advice would you give other women who may sometimes feel overwhelmed or exhausted or that they just can't be keep moving forward?
I feel that way every day. I'm exhausted. Oh. I don't mean it that way, but I mean, I don't know anybody that doesn't. I mean, when you're up at 5:30 and you're up working, you know, I don't work in a 9-to-5 job. I feel like I work 24/7, and obviously I have to travel a lot, and, you know, you find a way, you know, you figure out your support system and you figure out how to make it work. You know, I think there's so many, I mean, I'm like on the bottom of the list, but you know, you look at women who don't have the resources to be able to pay for childcare or to pay for, you know, the best schools, and they find a way to make it work. I mean, those are the inspirational women to me. I'm like, I'm like, if they can do it, I have nothing to complain about. I can figure out a way to make, you know, things happen. But I, you know, it's about having people around you that love you and love your child and that you can depend on. I mean, that's the thing. I think so many people are afraid or embarrassed to ask for help. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not the first person to ask for help when I need it. And, you know, I realize there's people that really want you to succeed. I mean, I was lucky enough to have a mentor who I met right when I was starting in the business as an assistant. And he's my best friend. And he went to the Oscars with me, and he's the chairman of one of the major record labels that are on top right now. And he's been the most inspirational person to me, because I really, you know, I really see how, you know, how you can be a good person and run a successful business and have learned so much from him. So
yeah.
I think it's also depending on people and looking at people that you want to emulate and the people that you want to work with and the people that you want to support you. And so many people want to support you.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people are afraid to ask for help. I ask for help all the time.
Yeah.
Nobody can do it by themselves.
I know I used to have a really hard time with asking for support. And I discovered I actually had an old belief or story that I believed I'm not supported. And so I was doing things in life to perpetuate that belief. Like if people did offer support, I'd say, no, I'm okay. What do you need? I got you. Right. Or I would never really ask. And then I would actually put myself into that overwhelm and stress and not realizing that, wait, like you said, people want you to succeed and they want to support you. And as I've opened up to that, I've realized that. And you know what? It feels pretty darn good to let people support you.
1,000%.
And yes.
Especially when you can support other people, you know? I think it's also realizing who you want to support too.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've had circumstances where I've had people put unrealistic expectations on me. And I think some people forget that, you know, if you don't return an email fast enough or you don't, sometimes it's like, it's overwhelming. Like you're running yesterday. I was like, I had a couple really, really important emails to return and I couldn't do it until, you know, this morning because I was running at meeting. I had meetings all day long and there's not a downtime. It's not like that person's ignoring you. So like for me, it's also figuring out how to best communicate with the people that you need support from or you need help with, and having also stepping back and having a bigger sort of understanding of that person's position or what maybe that person is dealing with or what that person has on their plate, so that you can, you know, sort of press and pull and not, you know, cross that line.
Yeah.
I always call it being respectfully persistent.
I like that. Have you found in the moments, I mean, you just said you're like, there are days I feel overwhelmed. Are there practices or mindsets or anything that you utilize to kind of get yourself back in the game to not feel so overwhelmed?
I think it's just figuring out how to prioritize your time. I think that's really, for me, the best way. Getting on the treadmill, which I'm looking at right now that I definitely should be on, or going for a walk. Sometimes I've just had to like go sit outside. I'm lucky enough that right now my office is at home, so I could just go sit outside and, you know, take a coffee break and just rebalance. And I think, you know, I think I used to be a lot more high strung. And I think I realized really, and I think part of it's just having a child, but perspective on what's really important. And you experience that with the birth of children, you experience that with the loss of the people that are closest to you. that all we have is time, right? So how you want to use your time and how you want to manage your time. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you really look at, you take away everything, all the madness, one thing that we can't control is how much time we have. So what's the most important thing is time. So I think, you know, figuring out, and I think that's also takes people a bit of time to figure out what they're passionate about. You know, often I think we all find that what we're passionate about is what we're probably going to do the best at. So figuring out how you can work within that scope of what, you know, makes you passionate. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes I feel overwhelmed, but oftentimes I'm also excited and I'm lucky I have a partner because, you know,
yes, we both that's don't. So huge.
Oh, it's huge. And you know, what's interesting is I didn't set out to have a partner. I feel like I'm the luckiest person in the world because I have the greatest partner possible and she does so much more than I do. And I feel like it's such an uneven balance, but I don't know if like I could actually do this. And we, you know, I think we often come back to a place and say to each other, like, it would not be fun to do this alone. And, you know, I think having somebody else you can depend on is really important. I also think like taking time to yourself is also really important. Taking a vacation, whether, you know, that means like driving somewhere and sleeping at, you know, in a cheap motel, like it doesn't have to be something expensive, but being able to take a break, I think is really important. And I think it took me a really long time to learn some level of balance, and I'm still working on balance in my life, but I think that's like the most important thing that we can do, you know?
Yeah. Hitting that reset button is so important because when you're operating on fumes and you think you can keep going, it's just like, just reset real quick, one day, 24 hours. The world is not going to end if you do, but you're going to show up so much more powerfully and with more energy that you can achieve the things that you want.
I've learned a lot. I mean, I see some very, very successful people and it's interesting to me. They're like, okay, I'm going to go wherever on vacation. And by the way, we can regroup in 2 weeks. I'm not reading emails. I'm not even taking my cell phone. So I'm unreachable.
Wow.
I think when I found somebody that is so successful and I'm like, you're unreachable for 2 weeks. I don't know anybody that's unreachable for 2 weeks. Like if you really need to talk to them, you know, and when I say that, I mean professionally, I think it just shows like he's British and he, you know, holiday is really important. Mm-hmm. And it honestly, I was like, oh my God, it's so true. How many people do you know actually like totally shut off? And I think it's also learning how to be present, and I have to do it with my own child.
Yeah.
Take the phone away. He takes the phone out of my hands and I'm like, okay, like I should not be looking at my phone or returning emails while I'm like spending time with my child. It just reminds you of, you know, being ever present. So I don't know.
Oh, I love that Braxy's your teacher in presence. Like mommy, he's your little Buddha. He goes, nope, don't get distracted. Be right here right now and pay attention.
He's very demanding. He wants mom, but I would want mom too. I understand.
Of course.
So I'm mom and dad. Yeah. He needs mom and dad. So I feel like I have to give him double the attention. Yeah. But yes.
But you're doing such an incredible job. Again, I see your posts and I just see how much you love him and the time that you're spending with him. And it's really beautiful to witness, even in the midst of the craziness of what you're up to.
By the way, no mother will tell you they love their child at all times. He's also drives me absolutely mad at moments. He's three. So I think, you know, he knows how to press mom's buttons.
There are little teachers. I mean, I don't have kids yet, but I have a niece and nephew and there are still moments. Yeah. Take time and also patience and compassion.
No patience.
And forgiveness.
I don't know if I have the forgiveness. I have the passion and I have the compassion, passion and compassion, but I'm not so sure about the level of patience. I'm working on it.
He's teaching you how to develop more of it.
Oh my God. He's crazy. I love him, but he's crazy. He is.
Oh, little Brax. You know, I want to kind of circle back to the stuff with your career because I know in our first conversation, you said some things that were shocking to me, as I mentioned to you, that I kind of wanted the listeners to hear as well about the process of, you know, you winning your Oscar. you shared some things about making the film as well as what happened after.
Well, it's never easy. I mean, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean,
it's never easy. I mean, people, here's the thing. I think the best thing that we could have done, and we didn't really think about it, and when I say we, I mean Bly, my partner, and I, is make a love letter to journalism. I think really, you know, we built our company as a home for journalists now. We know we spent a lot of time, you know, meeting all these incredible journalists and deep, you know, investigative journalists across the country in a time where being a journalist is not so easy. It's never been easy, but now it's really difficult in the world that we're living in. I think that, you know, we really wanted to build, you know, our brand and our company as a home for journalists. So we spent a lot of time building these relationships, the best thing we could have ever done. And not from a, you know, just from a, you know, respect and deep love and appreciation, you know, standpoint. But it's never easy. Nothing is easy. Like, we're not an incoming call business. We're still, you know, we won an award that very few people win, but it's still an outgoing call business.
Yeah.
Everything that we do, or mostly everything that we do, is self-generated. It's stuff that we source ourselves. It's stories that we find. And these things take a lot of lead time. I mean, we track down life rights. We have to get, you know, negotiate the legal. We have to make sure there's nothing out there. We have to develop creative, you know, we have to package them. We have to written and we have to develop them. We have to then, you know, convince somebody to make them, and we need to convince a director to do. I mean, it's never easy, mm-hmm. It's never easy. It's not even easy. I think Steven Spielberg would tell you it's not easy. I mean, nothing is easy. Making a movie is not easy, you know, or television's not easy. Not, you know, television's a little quicker of a turnaround than film, but it's not easy.
Right.
And certainly still not easy after, you know, obviously, you know, I hate focusing on that, but after the, you know, the accomplishments that we had, you know, the next morning I was sweeping the kitchen floor and was back to the grind on work, you know, and it's an amazing thing to have happen, obviously, because people are recognizing something that was so important to the world and giving people a voice. But at the same time, we have better access, but we still have to work just as hard, if not harder, because now there's also a level of expectation for what we do next, which are still the same. It doesn't change anything for us, but, you know, it's spending a lot of time, you know. We're not an incoming call business.
Yeah.
Everything we do, we go and find, and it takes a long time, and the projects take a long time to put together and develop and all of those things. But I think our best sort of attribute and our best thing that we have going for ourselves is our taste. And I think if you ask, you know, if you polled people in the industry that know us and know us well, they tell you that we have superb taste, and that's not something that you can learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you just either have or don't have. And, you know, I think a lot of the stuff that we're attracted to are just things that make us tick as people.
Yeah.
And make us want to fight for. So I think it makes it a little bit easier to do our job because we're fighting for things that we care about and deeply love. And I think Bly, my partner, is also a mom. She has two kids, and her kids are about the same age as Braxton. And I think that if you're going to spend time away from your children, obviously you have to make a living. But at the same time, it's, you know, what you choose to spend your time with and your time doing. But again, it's not easy. It's hard. It's really hard every single day. You know, we're still, you know, I think people take our calls and people want to share, you know, our material with people and clients, but you still have to get through the clutter. You still need to get people's attention, and we don't have a management business, and we don't have anybody financing our company. You know, everything that we do is, you know, self-financed and self-generated, and it's hard. The balance is hard every single day. So
do you ever have days where you feel like you want to quit?
Oh my God, every single day. Maybe not every day, but you know, you could go and, you know, you could go put together the most, you could find, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning author and find the best book and get the rights to it and put the greatest package together, like absolutely the greatest package in terms of a filmmaker or a writer or a showrunner or an actor. And you're just like dumbfounded. You're like, this is like the best thing out there. And like, people don't bite. It's never easy. It's never easy. And it's not easy for some of the biggest, most talented filmmakers and writers. Like, It's not, the business isn't what it was in 1985 when like you could easily sell something. But I think for us, like, again, it makes us just fight harder for the things that are important to us.
Well, and that probably will give me the answer that I'm about to ask you. The question too is, I have friends who are in different parts of the business, whether it's acting, writing, even wanting to become directors, and hear a lot of the frustrations and wanting to quit, yet they struggle with that idea, of course, because they keep showing up each day. What would you share with even, and people maybe that not in the entertainment industry, but are creatives, right? What would you say to them to have them find what they need to keep moving forward each and every day in the moments when it feels tough and they want to quit?
Well, it's just fighting for something you believe in. I mean, if what you believe in doesn't feel like it's worth fighting for, then it might not be. I mean, I hate to say that's probably not the answer that you want, but I feel like everything has to come from a place of passion. So you have to, you know, if you deeply believe in what you're doing, and you deeply believe in what you are trying to accomplish, like I could deeply believe that I want to be a center for like the Chicago Bulls, but it just, like, it's not possible for me to be a center. I'm not 7'2" and I don't look like Yao Ming. So like, I'm sorry too, but it just, it's not, I mean, I'm 5'4". I'm not 6'11" or 7 feet or whatever it is. Like, it's, you know, there's certain things that are possible and there's certain things that aren't, right? So I think it's a matter of figuring out with number one, what you're fighting for. Is it feasible and is it possible? We didn't come into this project and say, we want to win an Oscar. Like, that wasn't even it wasn't even a conversation. Nobody, even when the movie was done, we were still like, oh my God, I hope this lands with people. It's landing with us, but is it landing with people, right? So I think it's also just about knowing and making sure what you're fighting for is, number one, worth it. Number two, feasible. And number three, is something that you truly deeply believe in. Like, one of the hard avenues that might not be something you want to hear, but like, is acting. Like, I could never be an actor. Nope. Number one, my skin is not thick enough. Number two, I'm not talented enough. I wish I was, I wish I could, but I can't even, I mean, I would never, but like, you could want all day long to be, you know, Tom Cruise, but like, I think that you also have to look at like, is that feasible?
Yeah.
And also be realistic. Like, is it possible to do that? You know, it's not, if you truly want to be an actor, that's one thing. But if you want to be a movie star, that's not something you can totally control. You can dedicate yourself to your craft, but a lot of that is luck, you know, talent and luck. So, you know, I think it's putting your passion behind something that's feasible first, and then figuring out how to do it with dignity and persistence, you know, and also understanding the rules, right? Like, I have to know, like, I can't be 5'4 and be a center for the Bulls, right? I also have to know that I have, you know, in these days, if I want to play in the NBA, you can't go straight from high school into the NBA. You actually have to play college ball, right? And you have to actually be academically eligible. Like, there's all these things that you have to know, right?
Yep.
Like, if you're wanting to submit a script, and you're not somebody that's in the day-to-day business and you don't have relationships, people aren't going to read it. Please don't email it to people. You know what I mean? Number one, legally, they can't read it. Then most likely will ask you to sign something if they're willing to. But it's learning the business and understanding the rules of whatever you're trying to accomplish. And then, you know, there's nothing more frustrating than people that, I think, at least for me right now, I mean, I was mentored. I would love to, you know, mentor somebody. But I think it also is a matter of, I was worthy. I know this can sound wrong, but I was worthy of being mentored. I think the person that wanted to mentor me saw a lot of the things in me that he himself had at that, you know, a ton of hard work, a ton of knowledge, a ton of transparency. You know, it's not, I don't think today a lot of people have an expectation, or what's the right word? They have a level of, they're expecting something from people. And me, it was, I never expected anything from my mentor when I met him. I actually wanted to help him. So I, you know, and then the tables were turned, right? So I think that, you know, I think at the end of the day, I think that, you know, you need to have a broader perspective of whatever you're pursuing, whatever field it's in, and also some understanding of the rules of the game. And when I say game, whatever it is, whether, you know, you can't just decide I want to be a doctor and not go to medical school, right? So it's a level of, I think for me, it's just a level of understanding, knowledge, and doing the actual work it takes. And then putting a lot of hope in and consistency and pushing the ball forward. But you have to start with actually, like, you're not going to roll a square up the hill, right? It has to be a round ball.
Yeah. Love what you said, too, because there's a big part of, or for me, a theme that I keep hearing in the conversation is relationships. Like, what helped you get through challenging moments in time when all those things were happening, you know, with getting pregnant, your father passing, the movies being, two movies being made, et cetera, was having support, relationships that you'd built of people who want to see you succeed and are there for you. Same thing with your mentor. You were developing and cultivating a relationship where you wanted to give to this person.
17 years ago started.
Wow. Yeah.
A relationship of 17 years. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I think that's what I think a lot of people are missing. And I, you know, it's actually, you know, you find, I'm always so pleasantly surprised. I try to know every assistant's name that I speak to in someone's office, because those are the people that you might be working for one day, right?
Exactly.
And you know, I try and, you know, be as collaborative as I can and open-minded as I can, but relationships don't happen overnight. You know, people, you know, they generate quite a bit of building and trust and respect and all of those things. And I think that, you know, I think that no matter what business it's in, we all need support systems, but those are relationships that are built over time and they're not things that are handed out, you know?
What do you think have been the key things that you've done to cultivate these relationships?
I think a lot of them, I mean, I cultivated a lot of relationships when I was an assistant in the business. I mean, just from a business standpoint, you know, I read things that for people that couldn't get my boss on the phone, and I always got back to people, and I believed in transparency, and I believed in, and I still believe in all of these things, transparency, and I believe in, you know, I think I might be wealthier and more successful had I believed in, you know, I think people are willing to do things that I'm not willing to do to get ahead. And those are things I'll never do. And I won't ever compromise my own beliefs on anything.
Thank God. Yes.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of people that are willing to, you know, they're willing to step on somebody or willing to cut somebody out of something. And I think being an honorable person is, like, first and foremost, the most important thing. And I think people see through those things, you know, people want, you know, people to succeed. I mean, Sherry Lansing, who's like the goddess of our business, was telling me she was jumping up and down and thrilled when we won. She was so happy for us. And it was like,
I was too.
Thank you. But it brought tears to my eyes. I mean, that's someone that I have so much respect for and have had so much respect for so long. And, you know, somebody that I look up to, you know, and I think that, you know, cultivating relationships with people, you know, just takes time. And I also think that the other thing is that, especially in this business, you're coming up with a lot of people. Like, you're an assistant with a lot of people. Those are your peers, and wanting to help them and then trying to help each other. And it's not always like, I'm only going to go to the top. It's like, you want your peers to succeed, because if your peers succeed, you succeed, right? It's like a ship that you're trying to, you know, keep afloat. So I always look at things that way, because I think at the end of the day, when one person succeeds, a whole team of people succeed. If you look at, like, Judd Apatow and his crew, they all work together, right? They write for each other.
Adam Sandler. Yep.
You know, or Adam Sandler's, you know, crew. I think it's an amazing thing when you see, you know, people supporting other people and wanting their peers to succeed, because your peers succeed, you succeed. So I think it's kind of, those are the things that we look at. At least I look at too.
Yeah. I love that saying, we rise by lifting others, right? It's so true that you'll continue to gain momentum and move forward when the people around you do that too. And just, I mean, and even your relationship with Bly, I'm sure that you're able to move faster.
Oh, 1,000%. When we started to work together, I mean, I had pitched a project of hers. I had no involvement. She's like, okay, be a producer. I'm like, I'm not going to be a producer on this. You spent God knows how many years working on this project. That's yours. Like, help each other, right? That's really how we started building a relationship. This person will waste your time, or this person's going to screw you over, or this person's going to take advantage of you, or whatever those things are. You realize very quickly, like, the people, like, that's really who we were. We're two good people trying to, like, look out for one another. And then we realized we love the same types of material and the same types of projects. And then we ended up just starting working on projects, like, on a one-off basis. Then we realized that most of our projects were together and we wanted to partner. And, you know, it's mutually beneficial. Like, so I think, you know, that's sort of the classic way of building relationships over time. Nothing happens quickly, right?
Yep. I love that. Just like that saying too, in terms of relationships or other things with the whole business, they say, what, it's 10 years to become an overnight success.
Well, it took us almost that long to make Spotlight. So from start to finish, so there you go. Well,
there you go. Overnight success, 10 years.
It's crazy. And that, by the way, there's people that have worked on movies longer. I mean, I think Antoine Fisher, that amazing Derek Luke movie that Denzel Washington directed it. It took longer, you know, and you hear stories when people say things take longer. It's just amazing to hear.
I just wanted to touch on this real quick and just share, because when I've shared this with other friends of mine who are in the industry, they were shocked after our conversation. I was relaying some of the things that we talked about, and going back first where you said you have to be passionate about what you're doing, you had mentioned on the phone to me that you lost money making Spotlight.
When you look at something like that, I mean, I didn't physically lose money, right? But like, I didn't make money on that. You know, if you look at the amount of hours I put into it versus and the number of years I worked in on it divided by how much you make on a movie like that, it's not, you know, hopefully I made minimum wage. but, you know, you make movies like Spotlight and other movies that make a difference in the world because you're passionate about them. I love Ruffalo more than anything, but I'm not making the Hulk. So I wish I was, but I'm not. Well, I don't. It would be a nice balance to have the Hulk. But, you know, these small movies that are hard to get made, you often have to cut your fee, which we did, to cut our fee way down in order to get made. So, you know, it takes a long time, and some of these things don't ever actually get made. You know, I think at the end of the day, you could spend years and years and years on something, or you could spend money optioning something and it might never happen. So you could actually be in the negative. I might be in the negative. You actually divide the hours by, you know, the amount of time I spent on it. So.
Wow. Passion. But you created a beautiful piece of art, truly. To give people a voice and to stand for something.
It was a collaborative effort. It's not one person. It's, you know, hundreds of people go into making something like that happen behind the scenes, in front of the camera, behind the camera, publicity, press people, extraordinary journalists, you know, who are like the pinnacle of everything. You know, the victims' families, the lawyers, you know, people fighting for this for so long. I mean, there's so many amazing people that contribute to making something like this happen. It's not one person.
Beautiful. Well, Nicole, I have three questions I'm going to ask you. This is the Unlock Your Heart round. These are questions I ask every single guest to close it out. The first is, what's something unique about you that most people don't know?
I love basketball. I don't know if that's unique because a lot of people love basketball. I have a huge passion for sports. I love sports. I don't know. That's not totally unique though. I love to travel. That's not unique either. I'm not very unique. I don't know. I don't have anything.
I bet you do. But sometimes, you know what? When we're asked these questions on the spot,
it's a hard one.
Yeah.
I absolutely can't stand and hate the Clippers with a great passion. Is that unique?
Okay. Yes.
They should change their name and be from another place and not LA. I really don't like the Clippers. I really, really don't like the Clippers.
You Lakers fan?
I'm a deep, diehard Lakers fan.
The other question is, when you're in a really dark place, what's your go-to to get out?
Oh, Braxton, my little crazy child. Yes.
He's your light.
He's everything.
Beautiful. And knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
Spend more time focused on loving your parents. And I love my parents. I always loved my parents. But spend more time and make sure you take lots of videos with them. That's what I would tell myself. I know that's probably not – it's not career focused, but I don't know if I'd change anything. I think everything that I've done in my life, mistakes, and, you know, I made a lot of mistakes. I still make a lot of mistakes, but, you know, you learn from those and those sort of help sort of shape you as a human being. But I think spending more time with family, I always spend time with my family, but even more time because you never get enough time.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. Again,
perspective.
Coming back to relationships, that's what you're all about. And that's why you have the success that you do. And success, I mean, in the richness of relationships and what you've been able to cultivate because of that. Yeah, it's really, really beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Of course.
And I don't know. I think success is a hard word. It's a trigger word. I mean, what do we deem success, right? Do we deem it as, you know, I look at the successes, the little successes too. Little things like this person really wants to do this. Well, that's a success. It might not happen, but the fact that they want to do it's a success. There's lots of moments through, you know, a long working experience, like trying to get a movie made, that I try to focus on the little wins too and not just the big ones.
Yeah.
But the little wins are to me just as important as the big ones.
Yeah. And I see success. I mean, from where I stand now, from what I've done and all the growth work I've done, is I see success as how many people I'm able to make a difference with, you know, ultimately.
That's amazing.
I mean, I can create all these things externally, but it's really about the impact that I make on people's hearts. And that's why I'm on a mission to do to many people around the world. Yes. So
impact is important. Impact is so important. And there's so many people. I mean, a lot of the things we're focused on are global and are really about, you know, shining a light on indifference and yeah.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for your time, for your wisdom,
thank
for sharing your story. It's always fun to connect with you.
You too. So fun. I really appreciate it. You know, I really, really, really appreciate it. It's weird for me to be, you know, I feel like I have a lot to learn. So, you know, I have as much to learn as other people have to learn. So I think we all can learn together.
Of course. Yep. I got a lot to learn too. Still growing.
Still growing every single day.
Yeah.
Every single day.
All day. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. There are so many gems that Nicole shared, and it was such a beautiful reminder of the importance of taking the time to cultivate meaningful and supportive relationships and to fight for what you believe in. I know what's gotten me to where I am is my belief and focused vision to create positive change in the world, and the incredibly loving and supportive people I have in my life. Even creating this podcast has been a team effort with some of the amazing people in my life. So, to my family and all my soul brothers and sisters who have helped to make this podcast happen, you know who you are. I thank you guys so much. And if there's someone you know who could benefit from this episode, please share it out with them. I got so much out of today's episode. And if you did too, I would love for you to subscribe and leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, because that means we can support even more people to rise higher together. And I've got a free gift for you. Because I believe that self-love is the key to everlasting happiness, unconditional love, and to having anything and everything you want, I have a special gift for all my listeners. It's a free self-love kickstart that will give you some powerful practices to get on your journey to owning your worth, rocking your confidence, and opening up to your own love to radically transform your life. And you can download that free gift that I created just for you at stephaniekwong.com/self-love-kickstart. And finally, for everything that we mentioned in today's episode and for the links to connect with Nicole, you can check it out in the show notes. And that's over at stephaniekwong.com/EP9. You can also check out all my other podcast episodes there too. Until next time, I'm sending you so much love.